This is Dr. Rebecca Daniel Burke, your host for the American Counseling Association's 2014 podcast series. Today we are speaking with Creelan Peters, LPC, about her methods for creative counseling. Creelan received a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology and a Master's in Counseling. She is reality therapy certified through the William Glasser Institute and a licensed professional counselor in the state of Arizona. Creelan was recently certified by the Suzanne Jeffers PhD Institute to teach her process, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, based on her best-selling book. Through her work, she realized the power of not only addressing the symptoms, but also allowing people to tell their stories in creative ways. Creelan has been providing workshops that combine her unique combination of techniques. Welcome, Creelan.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. It's great to be here.
All right. Let's start out with, since you work with creativity, what is creativity? In your opinion, what is creativity?
Well, there's different ways to look at creativity. I know a lot of people think that creativity has to do with the arts. So when they talk about creativity, they think of in terms of an artist, a painter, a musician, a dancer, a writer, poet, that kind of thing. So that's where a lot of people go when you talk about creativity. But for me, creativity is much bigger than that. It's more about how we solve problems and how we actually, I call solving everyday problems. So creativity has to do with the way we think about things and how we can expand our thinking to be able to create more options in our lives.
Yeah. Well, okay, now, what is creativity in the context of wellness and in the context of mental health?
Well, creativity, if we look at creativity as a way of expanding our thinking, creativity really kind of focuses in on helping clients find options. Mm-hmm. So one of the examples that I like to use is about suicide. And I use that example because it's a pretty strong, you know, vivid thing mm-hmm. that we all can kind of relate to.
Like the worst case scenario.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I was a first-time therapist many years ago, I had a client early on who was suicidal, and it was very a challenge for me to deal with as a new therapist. So I, mm-hmm. of course, got my supervisor, and we both worked with the client, and my supervisor was talking about how suicide's only one option. And that really stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And so I think about when we have someone who's suicidal, it's a very tunnel vision. They can only think of one solution to whatever problem or problems they're facing. So mm-hmm. creativity in this context really helps expand someone's focus that there's more than one option, more than one way to look at things. And so there's just a lot of little tips that I use to help people with that, you know, expansion of figuring out different ways of looking at things.
Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I will hear a therapist say, I would like to be creative, but I don't have time to be creative. Have mm-hmm. you heard people say that?
I've heard excuses like that, yes.
And what is your response when someone says that?
Well, you know, I'm always a big definition girl, so I'm mm-hmm. like, well, what is your definition of creativity? So mm-hmm. that's where I find when people say things like that, they're really saying, well, I don't have time to write a song, or I don't have time to mm-hmm. write a poem, or do those mm-hmm. artsy kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where I think we get stuck is in our definition. So mm-hmm. when we say creativity, I will challenge that by saying you cannot be a therapist without being creative because your mm-hmm. job is to help people see different solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and there's also the focus of not only helping clients, but also using creativity within our own work and mm-hmm. within how we work. If we're in an agency or a school setting or another type of employment type of a situation, there's all these creative ways, and mm-hmm. and we all have to come up with creative ways depending on our funding sources. But also there's creativity if people are in private practice. I mean, mm-hmm. how do you survive in private practice without being creative in your marketing, mm-hmm. in your advertising, in your sales, in your promotions, all of that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And also, isn't creativity a part of self-care for some therapists? Probably would be good for all of us, but at least for some.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a lot of colleagues who use creative methods for their self-care, you know, myself
Mm-hmm.
included. I definitely sing in the car, not a shower singer, but in the car, and I write music. I've always kind of written music to one of two reasons. One is to get in touch with my feelings,
Mm-hmm.
And another is for that self-care aspect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What issues do you see come up in regards to expression of creativity with your clients?
You know, it's kind of the same as the issues that they just walk in the door with naturally. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we're dealing with clients, they'll come in with maybe a presenting problem, but what we really find is it's their way of thinking,
mm-hmm.
That their stuckness in, you know, in negative thought patterns, or they might have some feelings that they're either denying or maximizing,
mm-hmm.
Such as fear, anxiety, that kind of thing. So
mm-hmm.
those are really the two things that I see come up is the way we think, the thoughts that we have, and then also the feelings that we can get stuck in as well.
Mm-hmm. I know part of the work you do now is from the program Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. Can you tell us a little bit about that program?
Yes, absolutely. So I read that book. It came out in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it sometime long ago and loved it. And
mm-hmm.
then I got reacquainted with it a couple years ago and just really resonated very much with the messages in there. A lot of things
mm-hmm.
I noticed that are techniques that I have used with my clients for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had contacted the Institute and I said, hey, how do I be
mm-hmm.
a trainer? So I went through that process. But the process really helps people kind of with tools for how
mm-hmm.
to manage fear. Rather than, you know, there's some people out there who teach how to get rid of fear,
mm-hmm.
and that's not even possible, right? Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, fear is hardwired. It's a core emotion that we have. So the Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway is really about helping people identify what their fear is. It's helping them with tools. And a lot of the strategies, like I said, that I've already used with clients as a therapist,
mm-hmm.
And now I can use them as a speaker and a coach as well. And it's really helping them with feeling better about themselves, with positive
mm-hmm.
self-statements, with affirmations, with taking a look at every area of their life and figuring out which areas they're maybe not spending as much time in,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they're out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
And then also tools to get in touch with your intuition. And you know, there's also kind of a spiritual and energetic piece to that, which is wonderful because that's definitely part of my practice as both
mm-hmm.
a healer and as a person in my personal life. I subscribe to that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some basic ways that we can increase our creativity, both for ourselves and for our clients?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different little techniques. I remember
mm-hmm.
I listened to one of the ACA's, I think it was a teleseminar by Sam Gladding
mm-hmm.
when his most recent book came out, and I followed him for years because he, of course, talks so much about creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, got a lot of ideas from him as
mm-hmm.
well. So things like perspective shifting. So
mm-hmm.
I'm going to use some terms that I know our audience will understand. I, of course, will describe this differently to clients, but really
sure.
helping people to look at things from different angles.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the work that I do, I might take a song and have people write lyrics based on someone else's perspective in the song.
Hmm.
So that's one, you know, specific thing that I do with clients when I'm using music in our work together. But in more broader terms, it's really helping people to make different small changes. So just making a small change. Another idea that I give people is a really simple one, and it's just taking a different route to work in the morning. So we get so stuck on autopilot.
Right.
And when we get stuck on autopilot, we don't really take in our surroundings. We don't,
mm-hmm.
you know, we just kind of go about our day. And it, you know, sometimes that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But other times we want to really shake things up and start looking at things from a different perspective. So when you start to change which direction you're going in the morning, then you have to pay more attention.
Mm-hmm.
And when you pay more attention, you're going to notice things, and you're going to have a different experience. So just opening yourself up in that small way is a wonderful way to start using expanding creativity. I call it flexing our creativity muscles. So we have to do little things, and they can make a really big difference.
I remember years ago in a first private practice I had, I talked with this young man who was very stuck, and I said, okay, from now on, when you get up and you go to get dressed and you put your pants on, do you put your right leg in first or your left? And he said, I put my right leg in first. I said, okay, let's try you putting your left leg in first for a while. And I can't believe how miraculous that was for this young man, because it woke him up.
Right. We just don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I call the work that I do with music and sound and songwriting very silly work. And
mm-hmm.
I do this workshop in my local town at the, we have a mental health facility, and they offer trainings for CEs and stuff. And so I train there on a regular basis. And so I'm dealing with other therapists. And we do all these little silly activities. And I say even, you know, in this section when I'm talking about ways to expand our creativity, I say, well, think about all the different ways that you could make a sandwich. You know, you put, you know, the meat on first and then the cheese and then the lettuce. You know, just think about the order in which you do things, or even, you know, thinking about brushing your teeth differently. You know, sometimes we do little circles. Well, how about big circles? Well, how about standing on one foot? And how about, you know, and so it's also a brainstorming, and it can be fun and silly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I was, well, actually, I still am a mother, but when my son was much, much younger, we used to play that all the time. We used to sing about combing our hair and getting ready in the morning and just be silly. And so I think silliness, there's a correlation. I don't know if it's research-based, but I know there's a correlation between silliness and creativity.
Yeah, letting yourself go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's say you're at your office and a client walks in and you're feeling that they, you know, you want to introduce them to creativity, to get them started down a creative path. What are some of the basic ways you would work with this client?
Well, you know, it also depends. Some of them come in kind of knowing kind of the work that I do. And so we'll talk about different music and songs and things like that. And I do ask, especially if I'm working with teenagers, because the techniques that I use work really well with teenagers, is talking with them about what songs they like. And I've used this technique a lot, and it's a pretty simple one, but it just has amazing results, especially for teenagers who are in that, I don't know, you know, that apathetic teenager-y thing that they do.
Yeah.
And then they're, you know that they're coming in because their parents want them to come in. But I'll, you know, that's how I connect with teenagers specifically, is I'll ask them what music. And then the next session, I have the music. I've downloaded it. I have a lyric sheet. I give them a lyric sheet. And then I just say, you know, what lyric speaks to you right now? And that little technique helps open up so much, because then it usually speaks to them because something's going on in their life. And then that leads to, you know, I had one girl a few years ago, 14-year-old, and it just brought up, I mean, all of a sudden, in three sessions, she wouldn't say anything, but all of a sudden here, she was talking about the dynamic between her mom and dad and how that affected her and her sister, and it just, like, opened the floodgates. So that's one specific technique. But but really, creativity is something that I don't necessarily have to label as creativity when I work with clients. So if they're coming to me for work specifically with music and sound, then I have certain techniques. But overall, my goal is to find out how my clients think, and I'll tell them
mm-hmm.
that I can usually tell that within a few minutes based on the language that they use.
Mm-hmm.
Is it can tell, you know, are they a black and white thinker? Are they a shoulder? Are
right.
they, you know, all of that. And so that gives me a really good insight into mm-hmm. their thought process. And so then I start challenging that. And then all these principles, it's like, okay, so now I want you to try one little thing differently.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we're going to take a risk, and instead of you expecting your partner to, mm-hmm. you know, read your mind and and mm-hmm. all of that, how about if you ask this question? Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's like introducing the principles of creativity by mm-hmm. helping them look at things a different way, helping challenge them a little bit
mm-hmm.
and all of that. So there's, for me, it's kind of two different things. It depends on who I've got there in my office.
I can imagine that it shifts a little bit with different clients. I'm thinking of a group that I did years ago, and we were talking about, you know, all kinds of things going on in this group of women's lives, and one woman didn't share too much, and one day I brought in some clay. Just, you know, didn't necessarily know what I was doing. I just thought, you know, let them play with some clay while we're talking, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they were playing with the clay. And this woman started making this this circle that got wider and wider with a bigger space in the middle. And then suddenly the person who showed no emotion started crying. I said, you know, tell us what it's about. And it was that somebody very close to her had a terminal illness,
uh-huh.
and that space in the middle, the empty space in the middle, made her really feel how deep that was going to be for her, and she started sharing on a more deep level.
Uh-huh.
Is that the kind of thing that sometimes happens with the creative work you do?
Absolutely. It sometimes unfolds, and the work that I do with sound especially, because
mm-hmm.
I'm a big mind-body practitioner
mm-hmm.
and really love that whole connection of energy psychology,
mm-hmm.
And also the, you know, our memories are stored in the cells of our body. And so when we work with sound, especially when we're creating the sound, and sound is vibration, so that vibration kind of jostles everything going on,
mm-hmm.
and it certainly can bring up things for people that it's unexpected. I always warn people when we start working that way that it could happen, and I have never witnessed someone coming up with something traumatic,
mm-hmm.
but I always let people know that it is a possibility as we're mm-hmm. working with vibration and things like that. But as people... if they're tapping into lyrics, especially,
mm-hmm.
that I find brings up stuff in the work that I do.
Mm-hmm. So you will be looking at lyrics with them, or you'll be singing, or what? How does it come about, the lyric part?
Well, like in the activity that I talked mm-hmm. about before is having us looking at an existing song.
Okay.
Or if I, you know, we're writing a lyric, then they might come up with something that really gives me some insight into what's going on in their life as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Do you find that, do you work with children as well as adults?
I have in the past. My
mm-hmm.
focus right now is more on adults,
mm-hmm.
but I have definitely worked with kids in the past.
Do you find adults or children more easily access their creative powers, or is there one group, one age group that accesses it more easily?
I think children do, because they're still in the play mode,
mm-hmm.
and it's socially acceptable for
mm-hmm.
for them to be. I used to be an elementary school counselor, and I used all sorts of creative methods. I,
mm-hmm.
I had one, an 8-year-old girl who I did some of my songwriting work with, and she had some self-esteem issues,
mm-hmm.
and she was starting to get bullied by some of her peers, and she just wanted to write a song. She came
mm-hmm.
in, she's like, I want to write a song. So I brought my keyboard in, and we were working on, she was like trying to come up with even the arrangement. I mean, this is how, and she reminded me so much of myself. I wrote my first song when I was 8 years old. So I'm like, oh, this is so wonderful. And so we got to working on it, and she was working on the lyrics, and I was helping her, you know, asking her questions about how she, you know, what she wanted to say in the song and everything. We didn't finish the song, but she came in on the day that we were supposed to finish it. And she goes, you know what? I don't think I need to finish this because I feel so much better, and the girls are treating me really well. Aww. And it was just like, oh, my goodness. And wow. she came up, she had this idea. But I'd also done a lot of other interventions with the kids. And, you know, I get worried when I work with kids who aren't able to easily access play and creativity because there's something going on there. But a lot of them are just so tuned in, and a lot of times with kids, I will have them just draw as we're talking, and that it just takes this pressure off of them of, you know, having this adult stare at them and ask them questions and all of that. So yeah, you know, when I work with kids, I typically have a lot of, I have markers and crayons and, you know, a lot of other, in Play-Doh maybe, that kind of thing. And they're able to access things as they're playing. And what I find interesting, Rebecca, though, as you're asking about this age question, is that when I'm working with kids, young children, and adults, I use the same interventions. But teenagers are a whole different ballgame. So,
how do you work with teenagers? So there are many counselors out there who are going to be listening to this and who are sitting with that angry teenager saying, what do I do next with this person?
Well, yeah, and music is such a great way to connect with teenagers. I also became a drum circle facilitator last year. We'll add that to my many things. So, and, you know, drums or rhythm, actually, rhythm is the best way to tap into teenagers. So what I find, like, young kids can do, like, keyboards, xylophones, you know, traditional kinds of young kid instruments. Teenagers don't want to have anything to do with that kind of stuff. They, you know, so what I did, I piloted my songwriting therapy program several years ago with teenagers, and I asked them for feedback, and they were brutally honest, which was good. But I brought in wooden dowels that got cut down at Home Depot, you know, and just to use as sticks that they banged together for rhythm. And, you know, some of them got a little too excited with that, but they all were able to handle themselves. So obviously you have to figure out which population you're working with and what extent are the anger issues, if there's any DTO kinds of things. But I think rhythm, and so now the rhythm, you don't need anything for rhythm. You can just tap on a desk, you can tap on your knee.
Right.
You can use your voice for rhythm, or, or some kids like the beatboxing. So you can ask them to create a beat, or sometimes I'll even bring in a rhythm track, a drum track, so that the kids have that to go to. But teenagers really like that, and they like to be able to use that as a backdrop for writing, or and then even using music in the backdrop of a session sometimes can be really helpful.
And, you know, I notice in some of the hip-hop lyrics that, that I've looked at that there is a lot of kind of cathartic cathartic lyrics going on, which I think is amazing. I think a lot of people, particularly my age, are just saying, you know, it's just, you know, it just is loud and terrible and stuff. You know, but actually, if they really looked at the lyrics, some of them are quite profound.
Some of them are. I mean, I love Tupac. You know, Tupac is still one of my favorite
And
artists.
And Eminem?
Yes. And, you know, there's other stuff mixed in there. You know, there's the misogynist, there's the, the violence and that kind of thing. And, you know, this is something that parents will ask me. They're like, is it okay for my kid to listen to this stuff? And I love this question because the answer is yes and no. So I teach that there's different ways that we can use music for healing. So when we're talking about existing music that's already out there, there's great music, and I kind of categorize it. So there's music that tells our story and validates our feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the songs that kids like to listen to, teenagers like to listen to, because, you know, if they're angry or they're confused, there's Linkin Park, there's, you know, mm-hmm. there's all these mm-hmm. great...
Feel alienated, yeah.
Yes, yes, yeah. So that they can listen to this, and it really just validates where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is when we stay in that place, then we stay in that place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're consuming all of this stuff that helps keep us there, then we're not moving forward. So the second part of that is that there's songs out there that help inspire us.
Mm-hmm.
So there's songs that tell a story of how we overcome tragedy or trauma.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great songs like that out there, too.
Yeah.
So when I tell parents, yeah, it's okay for them to listen to this because it helps them validate, but we want to start introducing some other things to their repertoire as well.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me, where does the reality therapy work that you have been trained in, where does that come into the work you're doing? Because it sounds like you've put together a number of modalities, which I think is wonderful, or theories,
mm-hmm.
and probably modalities too. So tell me how reality therapy has been a part of the therapeutic work you do.
Well, one of the things that I love about reality therapy is mm-hmm. How it assesses, you know, do you have what you want, you know,
mm-hmm.
what are you doing to get what you want, and then evaluating and then making a plan. So I call it the WEDEP.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they also have the goal setting piece. And so that's what I you know, even though I haven't really looked at the reality therapy stuff because
mm-hmm.
it's been so long since I've been certified, it
mm-hmm.
I actually got certified in conjunction with my master's program. So I did mm-hmm. a lot of my papers in school and my presentations
mm-hmm.
based on that orientation, which I'm so grateful for because it really helped mold my style early on.
Yeah.
And it's just so inherent. And so I'm always going through WEDEP with people. It's like, you know,
mm-hmm.
what do you want? You know, it's always in there. And then I use the goal setting piece
mm-hmm.
with all of my clients. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, that model I call it SAMIC because it's
mm-hmm.
got all those are the letters. But then there's SMART goals. I mean, there's different goal setting
mm-hmm.
pieces that we all can use. But it's such a good goal setting program.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's how I've always incorporated those two major pieces. And then
mm-hmm.
of course the choice theory. I'm always like
mm-hmm.
challenging people about
yeah.
you know, is this really getting you where you want to go, and helping people understand the filter and the perspective
mm-hmm.
that we all have, you know, the filters that we have. Wow, you're really challenging my knowledge of reality therapy. I haven't thought
well,
about this in a while.
No, that's great. You're telling
great.
Me, you're telling me how you use it because you use a number of things.
I
yeah.
do, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just that there's the filters in reality,
mm-hmm.
in the choice theory part of it.
Yeah.
And so I'm always asking people, you know,
mm-hmm.
how they got to this, so because
mm-hmm.
it's all about that perspective,
yeah.
and then challenging them, you know, about how did you come to that decision, and would someone else in the same situation come to that same decision?
Mm-hmm.
So it's I'm always one of the things I love to say is that one small shift in perspective can make a huge difference.
Absolutely, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. No, I think that reality therapy, some of the techniques are also wonderful for adolescents. So the concept of, you know, if you were the person you wanted to be today,
mm-hmm.
how about acting as if you were that person today?
Would you act? Yes. Acting as if is a huge
yeah.
technique that I use. Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Wonderful. Wonderfully creative way. Because the child has to be creative when they think, you know, if I had everything I wanted right now, what would I be doing?
Right. And one of my favorite things with teenagers, because you know one of their standard answers to every question is,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yes. That's right.
And so I learned, I don't know where I learned this, but I just started asking. I remember doing my internship years and years ago, and I got the most difficult teenager in that shelter,
mm-hmm.
and I worked wonders with him.
Mm-hmm.
He taught me a lot. But one of the questions that I came up with back then is, well, if you did know, what would the answer be? Mm-hmm. And I have never had a teenager not answer it after that. And people say, "Oh, that's crazy." I'm like, "No, it's true, because it gets uh-huh. them out of that. You know, it's that automatic response."
Right. It's a license to go at it from another
right.
way.
Right. So I'm challenging them without confronting them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had success with that question.
Absolutely. That's a good one. How do you specifically address the negative thoughts that clients have around making changes in their lives?
Well, negative thoughts, like I said, it all starts with the language.
Mm-hmm.
So I listen for words like try.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to use my favorite Yoda quote.
What is that?
Do or do not, there is no try.
Uh-huh.
So I love Yoda.
That is, I like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So try is one of the words that I listen for. Can't,
mm-hmm.
should, maybe, sometimes, always, never. You know, these kinds of things that help me kind of get a
mm-hmm.
clue. So I start to challenge people's language. And so,
mm-hmm.
and then I ask them to say things a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of I should, it's I could.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of I'll try, it's I will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and using more positive, empowering language and just noticing the shift that that has in people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely one of the techniques. Another thing is using affirmations. And not only using any old affirmation, but I have a technique that I developed that helps people come up with their own personalized affirmation. And
oh,
it's really,
tell us about that.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. it's what I do is I have them write down all these adjectives describing themselves, and again, it's as if, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
things that they want to believe about themselves. And then we create this statement. So the standard statement is, I gently accept myself as a loving, caring woman or man.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to come up with the adjectives to just so, you know, might not be loving and caring, but I gently love and accept myself as a adjective person.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I instruct them to, you know, post that everywhere. I actually typically will type it out for them
mm-hmm.
And give them as many copies as they want so that they can put it up, you know, wherever, on their mirror, in their car, on their refrigerator, on their computer.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I tell them only to do that if it's safe, because
right.
not everyone around will understand
right.
or be kind. but, you know, affirmations are so powerful
mm-hmm.
because we go around telling ourselves negative things all the time, and
mm-hmm.
it's automatic. It's we're on autopilot with it. So what we need to do is retrain and get ourselves to really start saying positive things. So
mm-hmm.
it can be other affirmations too, but I love doing the build your own affirmation exercise with people, because it gives them some ownership of it, and it makes it more meaningful for them.
I like that too. Can you give us a few more examples?
Oh, of that affirmation?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I'm going to try and think of the one that I came up with for myself a few years ago.
Okay.
I gently love and accept myself as a dynamic, sexy, powerful woman. I think that's the,
mm-hmm.
the one that I came up with
mm-hmm.
years ago. And of course, you know, I feel like I'm that, so it's probably
mm-hmm.
time to go ahead and change it. But any adjectives. So some people have difficulty maybe expressing themselves. So then
mm-hmm.
you want to help them come up with, I'm open, or I'm expressive, I'm,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm, and I'm trying to think of examples. But it's really the adjectives.
Creative.
Creative,
yeah.
So some people don't think that they're a creative person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, again, defining what that means, but then coming up with it, some people feel like they're not good at dealing with their stress or
mm-hmm.
dealing with other kinds of situations, and
mm-hmm.
it has to do with how they are fearful. And, of course, we always want to word these in positive ways. We don't
mm-hmm.
want to say an affirmation of I don't want this, you know,
right.
because what we focus on expands. So
right.
it's always something in the positive, and it's always something that's in the present.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I am this now rather than I want to be, because
mm-hmm.
then we're creating this situation of we're always chasing it.
Right.
Yeah, so we always
yeah.
want it written in the present tense.
Yeah. Those sound Wonderful. And it sounds like a good idea, too, of giving them a few words to start that sentence with.
Yeah, and that's what I find, because when you say, hey, write an affirmation for yourself, people go blank.
Yeah, I can see why. Yeah. But you so give them a couple of words to mm-hmm. start it with.
Right. So, and love and acceptance are key. So, because a lot mm-hmm. of us don't come feeling that, you know, if we're coming to see someone for help, we're pretty
right.
low.
Right.
So it's, you know, those are the words that I find are very powerful.
They're sometimes at the worst point in their lives when they come.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And sometimes we have to do some work before we can get to the affirmation stage.
Right.
We've really got to dig through some of those negative thoughts and get some success under their belt before I introduce that. But usually mm-hmm. intuition guides me as to when the best time is to introduce that.
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting because people will say, I'm not creative. I'm not an artist. And in fact, that woman with the clay said that. And I said,
uh-huh.
Well, then just play with it. Just hold it in your hand. You don't have to make anything. You know.
Right.
And before you know it, she had a breakthrough. But she was saying, I can't do art. I can't. You know.
Right. And there's that can't word right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. How do you specifically address the negative feelings such as fear and anxiety? That clients have around making changes in their lives, and you know, there is a lot of anxiety about making changes.
There is, and there's a lot of fear too. Actually,
yes.
In the Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway process, we talk about how fear accompanies change. I mean, it's just they're like peas in a pod, you
mm-hmm.
know. And so, if we can get our brain wrapped around that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we know when we're starting to feel fearful or anxious around a change that
mm-hmm.
that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not abnormal. We're not going crazy. We're just experiencing the normal progression of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, but a lot of people have so much anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, you know, the physical symptoms of anxiety. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I also have been trained in mindfulness. And so
mm-hmm.
I use mindfulness to help people calm the body and get that mind-body connection back. Because a lot of times, and it's, you know, with so many people, we dissociate.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
just shut down our body. Like, we're just so in our heads. We're so
yes.
thinking
mm-hmm.
that we just forget that, oh, we've got this body, and
mm-hmm.
it's giving us these signals all the time. And if we ignore the signals, then, you know, some bad things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So using mindfulness and breathing meditations, I incorporate that in every single aspect of my work. You know, I always
mm-hmm.
do that with my clients. I run an improv songwriting group every month, and the first
mm-hmm.
thing we do is a mindfulness exercise because I am very energetically in tune with other people's anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I don't want to feel anxious when I sing. So I,
mm-hmm.
you know, do it mostly for them, but also in part for me because I'm like, wait a minute, I'm picking up on this. So
mm-hmm.
we always, you know, use the breath to calm down, to reconnect with the body.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can be grounded in our experience moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely one of the ways. And then also helping people understand more about these emotions. These are not bad things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have these labels of that's a good emotion, that's a bad emotion.
Mm-hmm.
They're just emotions. They're just giving us information. That's their job, is to give us information
mm-hmm.
about what we're experiencing. And then from there, we have a decision of what we're going to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so it's about training people, about helping them have a different relationship with their emotions, and then also helping them reconnect to the physical experience and their body
mm-hmm.
with the emotions so that they can be whole in making a decision to move forward.
The interesting thing about all of these techniques is you've put together a number of things. It's kind of the Creelan way.
Yeah.
You know, mindfulness, reality therapy, feel the fear and do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even what you, the more traditional stuff you had to learn to become an LPC, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so when you're working with people around fear and anxiety, do you find sometimes that they actually, even though you don't necessarily want that they actually are going to have medication to be able to work with you?
You know, I don't do as much therapy anymore, but mm-hmm. when I was, mm-hmm. absolutely. You know, sometimes it's just an advantage to get the body to calm down. Because if they cannot get out of the thought spiral, that's what I call the mm-hmm. spinning, racing thoughts that we have, right. which may, of course, be associated with an anxiety disorder or mood mm-hmm. disorder. I will give them time. I mean, my stance on medication is use it if you need it, mm-hmm. but maybe try some other things first. But if it's something that's getting in the way of everything, then, you know, let's try that. So, mm-hmm. yes, I absolutely have, and it's gotten people to calm down to the point where they're like, oh, now I can really hear what you're saying, yeah. you know. Yeah. And so definitely, I mean, there's always – you know, it's just one other intervention mm-hmm. to use. And I like to educate people on really being in touch with their experience of mm-hmm. any technique, whether it's medication or using sound or using CBT methods or reality therapy or any of that stuff, is mm-hmm. notice how it's affecting you, mm-hmm. you know. So if you're having good effects from it, great. If you're not, then we need to take a look at it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're doing so much workshop work now.
Yes.
Tell us how you got started with that, because I know there will be some people listening who are thinking, you know, I'd like to do maybe more workshops for a while, see clients a little less, and do some workshops. How did you get started?
Well, that's a long and winding road question.
Well, just give us the beginning of the long and winding road.
I've always really loved teaching.
Mm.
And I had different careers in my life. I've mm-hmm. been in administrative support, and mm-hmm. I've also been a graphic designer. And in every job that I've ever had, I have been a go-to person for teaching other people how to do it.
Mm.
And so then I'm like, okay, I'm a trainer now. And so it's just kind of inherent in the way that I am. And so when I became a therapist 13 years ago and got into my first job doing individual therapy, I'm like, I could do a lot more with a group. So then they gave me a group, and I was just in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And so I noticed early on in my therapy work that I really loved working with groups.
Mm.
So I'm a kind of a go big or go home person. So one of the very first workshops that I did or presentations I did was actually for the American Counseling Association. Like, you know, I'm not going to do a local
at
one.
A
I'm
conference?
Just going to go, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
So, yeah, and so I had presented on my songwriting therapy work back then.
Mm-hmm.
But I just – That's how I like to work. I feel like mm-hmm. I connect well with the group process. I love mm-hmm. helping people and those teachable moments. And I also love being on my toes when people just throw anything at me. And
mm-hmm.
I've got so much in my repertoire and my experience and my background that I'm able to just roll with it. And I just love those teachable moments. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was just inherently drawn to it. So,
mm-hmm.
and I know a lot of colleagues. I actually run a networking group for therapists here in mm-hmm. Arizona, and a lot of people seem to want to head in that direction. And I think it's really a matter of finding who you want as clients, because a lot of people, excuse me, use that as a catalyst to get more clients in their practice. It's actually a really great marketing strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing a lot more presentations in my area as well, is just really find out where your ideal clients are hanging out and ask mm-hmm. if you can go speak. So I speak to community groups. I speak to at different, like, spiritual centers. There's also mm-hmm. In my area a lot of metaphysical bookstores and things that have space for speaking.
Yeah.
So just, but there's a lot of fear around that, too, and I get that.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
There's a lot of fear. Actually, public speaking is one of the biggest fears. So,
yeah, that is a big fear.
It is a big fear, yeah.
But it sounds like it could help a lot of our members who are just wanting to expand their practice.
Yes.
Because I know whenever I have given talks or tried to train some therapists, somebody will come up and say, are you seeing clients now? You know, that just something that you said during the mm-hmm. workshop made them think, that it might be a good match to be in therapy with you. So
right.
I think that a lot of counselors would probably find that they had more clients if they did more of that kind of thing.
I think so. I think
yeah.
there's a real untapped market because not
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are going that extra mile. Because, you know, it's one thing to go and speak to a networking group of your peers.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens to be my target market, so
right.
that would be good for me. But, you know, if you're looking for a specific target like couples or
mm-hmm.
Children or adolescents or
mm-hmm.
working with a specific modality like EMDR, which is so specialized,
mm-hmm.
or EFT, or even a specific issue such as trauma or abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are places out there, you know, in my local community, there's, you know, in the hospitals
mm-hmm.
really are open to having therapists come in and do educational things for patients
yeah.
and things like that. So
yeah.
there's a lot of avenues for,
yeah.
For that.
One of the more creative counselors that spoke to me recently was telling me about how she set up parenting groups in the waiting room of pediatrician's office after
uh-huh.
hours.
Yeah.
And had, you know, and asked those pediatricians to, you know, to send some of their people who need parenting classes there or parenting support there.
Mm-hmm.
And how creative. I mean,
absolutely.
There's your
yeah.
referral source and everything. I mean, I think there's something to us being creative ourselves, our clients certainly too, but just ourselves in terms of meeting our goals with our clients.
Yeah.
The numbers that we want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we are to our last question, which is, ACA now has over 54,000 members, most of whom are clinicians. Is there anything I have left out that you want our members to know?
Oh, boy. You know, I think maybe just a kind of a synopsis of some of the points we made, which is just to really to look at creativity in a different way, and
mm-hmm.
more expansive of what kinds of things you can do for not only your clients in working with them in creative ways and helping
mm-hmm.
them expand their thinking and looking for different solutions, but also using creativity for yourself as a self-care method.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And really,
absolutely.
Yeah, and so you either a creative technique for self-care or what other ways can you take, because that is when
sure.
I worked with a lot of abuse and trauma,
mm-hmm.
so I had a lot of vicarious trauma going on.
Mm-hmm.
But that, and that takes a while to recover from.
Mm-hmm.
yeah,
yes.
So it's,
I mean, for us to really hear, for some people to be hearing all day, every day, the worst thing that ever happened to people is
yes.
really tough. Yeah.
Yes.
Takes its toll.
Right, yes. Mm-hmm. And I was working with young kids and just,
yeah.
oh boy, you know,
mm-hmm.
some of the stories are pretty horrific.
They're tough.
And so, I mean, it's being expansive, but I love that the what you brought into about being
mm-hmm.
creative in marketing.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely another avenue I think that we need to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we are employed or work for ourselves,
mm-hmm.
there's always ways to be able to be more creative within whatever structure that we want or whatever framework that we're working within to expand our reach.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's getting out and speaking or whether that's coming up with maybe different products or services that fit the needs of our clients, I
mm-hmm.
mean, there's so many different ways that we can expand what
mm-hmm.
we're doing and help more people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much, Creelan Peters, for joining us today to discuss creativity. To view links to this program, to write to the presenter or the host, go to www.counseling.org and click on the podcast page. This is Dr. Rebecca Daniel Burke, your host for the ACA 2014 podcast series, signing off.